The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on WSBR in Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge. That's on 88.1. Watching us on the PCTV Select app that is free to download, and also on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301 on your cable dial. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. Glad to be with you and glad you're with us. Thursday, July 2nd. It's a hot one. It might be the hottest day of the year. I don't know. Possible, but certainly the hottest day of this little stretch of time right before the 4th of July parade coming up. It's going to be in the 90s. So we're going to hear that weather forecast in just a minute. Some dangerous heat out there today, so definitely take precautions. Hydrate as much as you can. Keep that water flowing. Get cool if you can. Stay inside if you can. There's a lot of people out there that can't stay inside on a day like this, and you just got to watch your steps and keep an eye on what's going on. We have Alan Harris here this morning. Alan is the CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Berkshire Money Management. It's been a while since we had Alan on the show. So much to talk about in the world of money and finance and the economy. So I'm looking forward to speaking to him about all those things, and you should be too. Let's say one thing before we get to the weather forecast. The Pittsfield 4th of July Parade is celebrating the generations this year, and Pittsfield Community Television is bringing you the live coverage. You can join PCTV on July 4th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. for live parade coverage from South Street in Pittsfield on PCTV, Access Pittsfield Channel 1301, PCTV Select 1, and on the Pittsfield Community Television Facebook page. The live coverage of the 4th of July parade is supported by Greylock Federal Credit Union and also by Berkshire Community College, Access Plus, KJ Nosh Catering, the Boys and Girls Club of the Berkshires, Hudpuckers Pub and Grill, and Beacon Bank. We'd like to thank all of them for their support of our broadcast of the 4th of July parade, where you can watch that right here in Pittsfield and all around the world. And believe me, people do. We really do get notes from people all around the country and the world thanking us for that coverage, and it always is a lot of fun doing it. So that is coming up in 2 days, Pittsfield 4th of July parade. All right, let's get to that weather forecast and see what the National Weather Service has in store for us today. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Heat advisory in effect until 8 p.m. EDT Friday. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature around 70. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny, hot with highs in the mid-90s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Well, that was the shortest weather forecast for a really hot day. I guess you don't have to say too much about it. It's going to be hot. And I hear, mid-90s, so certainly expect something in the, I think yesterday was 94. We could certainly be breaking that today in the span of probably in the mid to late afternoon, I think. So if you want to get out and do something, maybe the morning is the best time. It's only 73 degrees right now.
What is it in Kalshi? Is it going to go over under 100?
I don't know. Do we have a Kalshi bet here for,
we should do that.
For Pittsfield to see what temperature it's going to be today? Alan Harris, thanks for being here today.
Glad to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And, since you mentioned Kalshi, one of the things on my list here to ask you about is prediction markets. So this is a new word for a lot of us here, although, anyone who sort of watches any kind of TV or sees any kind of advertising, sees ads for Kalshi or Polymarket, or I guess those are the two big ones right now.
Yeah.
I guess Facebook this morning just announced that they're going to be doing their own prediction market product pretty soon as well.
Robinhood is going to get into it.
Robinhood, oh boy. So this is a trend, right? This is something that is happening. Let's throw it right out there. Is this investing or is this gambling?
It's gambling.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. I mean, every now and then I'll find myself in Las Vegas losing money at the roulette wheel or playing blackjack. It's a fun thing to do.
Right.
You just have to figure out what size you might want to lose. It's really interesting. So before we dig into it, for Gary Neff, was Kelce or Pauly Marker, but it was one of those two big ones, I believe. They kind of got, I don't want to say reprimanded, but exposed.
Sure.
Where there was social media influencers talking about how they were winning big on using their trading platforms, or their, I shouldn't say trading platforms, their gambling platforms, or whatever, however reference that. And the whole idea was to go ahead and entice people to be like, oh, this is interesting. People are making money. I want to do this too. I want to be part of this vibe. I want to win because these people are raking the bucks, and I can too. And it turned out they're being paid by, again, I forget just if it was Kelce or Pauly Marker. They're being paid by one of the big ones to lie.
Yeah.
They might have been playing, but they weren't winning, and they weren't even necessarily playing the things that they were talking about. So it was a scammy type of advertising.
Sure.
And you know,
who would have thought, right? Yeah, right.
And the concept is pretty good. Let's have an ad saying, here, this is working well, it works for me, it can work for you too. And I think it's legitimate, but you have to, you know, put disclosures on that type of stuff. You can't lie. You have to say this is for, you know, it's not necessarily that it's even hyperbole, but you know, this is hypothetical. Yeah. My exuberance is acting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the reason I asked you whether you thought it was gambling or investing, you know, futures trading, let's say, which is in a form of investing, is because these companies put themselves out there as that because there are many states where gambling is illegal. And so they can't put themselves forward as a gambling site. So they say, well, it's really not gambling. It's trading.
Yeah. So there's perhaps a regulatory definition, then there's the definition that we all know.
Well, of course.
And you know, I have not tried to label it as a definition, so I'm doing so sort of on the fly. But I would suggest that if there's a binary outcome, then it's gambling.
Yeah.
You know, in an investment, there's grades in terms of how much you can lose and how much you can win. But in a prediction market, it's pretty much, or just like at the blackjack table, it's either you win, you lose. So yeah. I feel it falls more into the gambling side.
I mean, it has all the hallmarks of it, right? You're putting up something valuable to risk. There are odds, right, that you're going to win or not win. I guess the only other thing that being sort of not regulated is you also don't know how much sort of insider trading there is going on in these things. And I think that's been brought up a lot with people is, you know, who are trading these things and what kind of information do they have that you don't have as an ordinary person putting your money in and saying, I think such and such is going to happen.
Well, that's an issue too. So you help me with the story if you remember better than I do. But when the U.S. went into Venezuela, there was I was just going to use them interchangeably, Polymarket and Kelce, because I forget which one is which and who does what. But someone put on Polymarket that there was going to be a regime overthrow. It was created maybe 48 hours before. Who would have possibly thought this person put a bunch of money down? And it was sort of a military insider, and there's, you know, there's been other unscrupulous sort of things going on, but he's become sort of the face. I forget his name. He's become sort of the face of how you can game the system and use insider information to make money on it.
Yeah.
And so this is going to recur because if there's a way to make money, people are going to try to expose that system.
Right. And as typical, you know, technology and these types of things get out in front of policy and in front of laws a lot of times. So should these things be regulated? I'm sure they will be at some point if they're not, you know, somewhat already by states. But there doesn't seem to be too much of an incentive on the, say, federal side to get in and say, wait a minute, we got to put some guardrails in here, right? People can be very easily harmed by this. And, you know, there's a certain amount of caveat emptor where, you know, buyer beware, you have to have that mindset. If you're putting your own money on something, you ought to know what you're doing. But, you know, do you really? I don't know.
Well, you know, let's bring it back to the gambling side, because the casino side, the little casino side. some people like me, if you're playing, like, I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit down at the cheapest possible table and try to draw it out as long as possible because I know I'm going to lose money. There's other people who feel that they actually have an edge. Mm. And yes, there's a luck component to it, but there's also a knowledge component to it. So there are going to be people who use the prediction markets who feel that they have an edge.
Yeah.
And on the far extremes and the tails, there's going to be people who take wild bets on both sides. But if there's enough people betting on average and using your money, you are going to be able to perhaps get a sense of where the actual market is going to go or whatever the bet is actually going to go. And so we've had actually a conversation in our last investment committee meeting at Berkshire Money Management. You know, what are we going to do with prediction markets? Obviously, we're not going to make these binary bets, but how can we use this as a suggestion as to what could happen? You know, so for example, you can see in policy market, what's the odds that you're going to have the Federal Reserve raise rates or cut rates in the next 6 months or next meeting, whatever happens to be? And you can look at the futures markets, which we usually do, put out this group house CME, and you can look at all the data and everything too. But you can also use that as part of the mosaic of trying to make up a decision. So we want to use it because we want to use it as an investment variable to consider along everything. And if we think, for example, the Fed's not going to raise rates and the poly market says huge chance that it's going to happen, there's a lot of money and a lot of voters on that, we might actually reflect on it and be like, okay, what is our analysis saying that the poly market's saying differently?
So like basically it's hard to ignore, right? You can't just discount it and say, well, they're saying over here on, you know, one of the prediction markets that something is going to happen, but all the indications are the other way. Why is that? You got to ask yourself the question, why?
Yep. Right. That being said, there are, I guess the terms would be bookies who are setting the odds, just like you would in a sports book at a casino. And so, you know, sometimes people will say, the stock market's a casino. If it is a casino, it's the worst casino in history. And I'll explain why in a second. Because the poly markets and the prediction markets are like the sports book, are like the table games, where you have someone adjusting the odds or the odds are already set so that you may win a particular hand or you may have a nice hot streak. But over the long time, it is designed that you are going to lose money. And if you specifically or the aggregate the house is going to win. Whereas with the stock market, it's actually just the inverse. Where if you're playing for the short term, that hot hand or looking for a streak, the odds are actually more considerably against you and you're more likely to lose. But over the long term, you're likely to win.
Right.
So is it gambling or is it investing?
Decades and decades of data and information showing that that's the case.
Yeah.
And then with the casino, you certainly have regulation and you have, as you said, there have to be a certain odds that are published. So you know when you're getting to the roulette wheel that you're going to, you know, you have a possibility of losing because you got those two green slices there on the roulette wheel, right? The zero and the double zero. So that's the house's advantage. So you know that it's not a 50-50 shot every time. But you know that going in. So you're going to spin the wheel and you know what you're in for. With the prediction markets being unregulated right now, do you really know what you're in for?
Well, you know, so the people who are going to play are going to say yes.
Yeah.
Or you know, there could be some people who say, I don't know, but it's fun. Yeah. Right. And that's you get into regulation. You also get into regulation, as it was referencing earlier on, the fake influencers. You know, you have to probably have some regulation in terms of like who plays, what age. There's too much opportunity to lose money to not be regulated appropriately.
Yeah. Too much. Potential for abuse, right? Yep. I mean, certainly until that gets sussed out. But hey, if it's fun and you're managing it, that's something. Some people can't manage it, and you got to know that too, right? That's a sort of a function of gambling as well, is to know when you can't do it anymore.
Oh, yeah. Addiction's a serious problem.
Yeah. Alan Harris, my guest here, if you're just joining us, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Berkshire Money Management. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. So big news at the top of the Fed in the last couple weeks. We have a new Fed chair, and that is Kevin Warsh, replacing Jerome Powell, who had been there for, almost 10 years?
Sounds about right. Yeah, because he went in during Trump's first term.
Yeah. And so a long time. So now, you know, financial markets are looking at that. I'm sure there's a little bit of uneasiness there, right, when it comes to a change in personnel, especially someone who is sort of looking to shake things up, looking to change the way the Fed communicates and makes decisions and the data that they take and things like that. One of the things he said recently was that he was going to be looking at new indicators for how they measure inflation, which I thought was very interesting. What was wrong with the old indicators of how we measure inflation, and why does he want to look somewhere else? What is he trying to do there, you think?
Okay, so the pardon me, the new indicator he wants to use is called the trimmed mean. And there's a lot of different ways to measure inflation that are out there. And the Fed's used the Federal Reserve Board has used the published information on trimmed mean for a long time. So it's not something he's creating.
Okay.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that. The only problem, let me explain what it is first. So people are familiar with probably Consumer Price Index, mm-hmm. CPE. The Federal Reserve tends to look at the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, the PCE. Mm-hmm. And the PCE is probably a better component for them to use than CPI, because the CPI is this fixed basket of goods. Mm-hmm. And the PCE more reflects the changes that we make as prices adjust. Hmm. If the price of one thing goes up, we probably buy less of it and we buy something else. So it reflects more our actual buying habits. Hmm. The trimmed mean, what it does is take out the things that are very low and takes out the things that are very high. So mean being average, it's saying, let's take the average, but let's not include the things that are could possibly skew it.
Hmm. And so in the last few months, one of the things that skewed it has been energy prices, gas prices.
Yeah, so they could be like, listen, let's not pay attention to gas. Let's not pay attention to these gas prices over here. I don't have a problem with that. The problem I guess I would have, though, is the timing at which. If their goal is to go ahead and hit the target of 2% for inflation, and it's, call it 3.5% right now, to change the metric used before they hit target, I think, reduces their credibility and begins to show some rash. It begins to look like they're creating a reason to cut interest rates because they want to cut interest rates, as opposed to cutting interest rates because the data tells them to.
Yeah. And that would be more of a political step in a way, right? And that's, I think, what maybe some of the financial markets are concerned about, that the president now has put his own person on as the Fed chair, which again is one vote on the Federal Reserve Board, right? They have to, there's how many people that vote? 17 people or something like that.
I think it's dozen, I forget.
Whatever the number is. It's more than one. So it's just, you're not putting one guy in and saying, okay, I'm going to lower interest rates because I think they need to be lowered. So you need to be able to look at the data, but the data that they look at are things like how hot is inflation, right? Which is something that's going on right now. And everybody around knows that inflation is an issue. And then the other side of the coin is the jobs market. How well people are employed, how many people are looking for work, is there high unemployment, things like that, right?
So the accusation is that Trump put in Kevin Warsh because he'll do his bidding and cut interest rates, which generally juices the economy and juices the stock market, and it reflects better upon the president. Could help in midterm elections. You know, and there's been a long history of presidents privately jawboning Federal Reserve chairman to reduce interest rates. I mean, there's been legend of a president, I forget which president it was right now, but taking the Fed chairman by the collar and saying, you're going to cut rates. I mean, so
that sounds like Johnson.
It might have been
anybody. If it's grabbing somebody by the collar, it was LBJ.
and so it's not new to have that type of influence from the executive administration. Mm. But what is new is for it to be public. Mm. And it's also not new for the president to select someone who is more likely to have a thought similar to theirs. Mm. I mean, you look at the Supreme Court. Mm. That happens all the time. It's time to put in a justice. The president is more likely to put in someone who's going to favor their way of thinking.
Yeah.
But because there's a quite frankly, a hatred toward Trump by a lot of people. And because he's been so vocal about it publicly, the concern has been, what will the Federal Reserve's independence be like now? And why that may be favorable for the economy short term to cut interest rates, that may not be the thing that is best for the economy over the long term, because it has a couple mandates. One is to fight inflation, and inflation is running above its stated objective of of 2%. Why cut interest rates? And if the economy is, the other mandate is jobs, and if jobs are being created, you know, if you cut interest rates, okay, why are you doing that? Because the economy is looking good already. Why bother juicing the economy? And 4, 5, 6 months ago, you might have wanted to cut interest rates because the job market wasn't looking good, but it's actually popped up in the last few months. So it's put the Federal Reserve in a little bit more of a conundrum. Because it could roll over again. Like right now, for this brief period of time, jobs look good. But if you look at all of 2025, the number of jobs created per month was something like 10,000. And almost all of that gain was from the healthcare industry. And so although jobs have popped up in the last few months, the job market has looked miserable. So this, you don't necessarily want to keep interest rates high when the job market looks miserable.
Well, of course, it's a very popular thing to want to do, right? Who doesn't want lower interest rates on your home mortgage or your car loan or your credit card or anything like that? So it's certainly a populist idea to say these rates need to go lower. But we've also seen that in other countries where, you know, an authoritarian person comes in and says, okay, we're going to bring the interest rates down artificially, where, you know, inflation is going crazy in their country, in the economy, and they bring the rates down. And what happens to inflation? Shoots way up, right? Because the money supply is easy now, and, you know, prices just go crazy. So it actually has the exact opposite effect, right?
Yeah.
It's not a great move.
If wage gains were to outpace the inflation, it's not as big of a problem. And for a long time,
that's a big if though, right?
For a long time, that's actually been the case. In the last few months, and again, a few months does not necessarily make a trend, just like I was saying with the job market popping up in the last few months. But in the last few months, we've actually seen inflation outpacing wage gains. And there's a vibe check. So there's a numbers check, which is that, what I just referenced. It's literally harder to buy things without going into debt or tapping into reserves if your wages aren't keeping up with inflation. But there's also this sort of this vibe condition, too, when prices are going up, even if your wages are going up as much. Because in our mind, the wages are going up because of things that we did and we deserve it. I'm more productive. I'm becoming more educated. I deserve this raise. But it feels more unjust when prices rise. And so it's hard for us to make that connection between the two of those. So what we typically do is have reduced purchases on an inflation adjusted basis. We might have more purchases because on a nominal basis, the things cost more. So it looks better for the GDP, but it kind of has this sort of ghost effect where, yes, the gross domestic product, the overall economy is looking bigger because of these higher dollar amounts, but it's not volume increasing.
And that kind of leads me to the next stage of this, right, which is what they describe as the K-shaped economy. So we talk about how the consumer has held up very well, that purchases are still happening. People are still buying things. We haven't seen what they call a demand destruction yet, right, where the prices have gone up so far and people's wages have stayed down so low that they can't buy what they used to buy. So far, people are still buying, right? And so the economy rolls along. But the people on the upper level are the ones buying the most, and the people on the lower level are making sacrifices. That seems to be the story that is happening. Do you buy that? Do you see that happening?
Yeah. So where there has been some demand destruction, though, has been on gasoline sales and purchases, which has been helpful to keep oil prices low. There's a few reasons why oil is probably lower than you would have expected after U.S. Invaded Iran. But yeah, it has been historically, yes, you've seen a bit of a K-shaped economy, but just not as distinct as it is now. something like 20% of the households are responsible for 80% of the consumption. That's not to say they're buying 80% of the soap, but they're buying 80% of the volume out there, yeah, because they're buying super expensive cars and small planes and houses.
They're buying 80%
of the yachts. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it just has been definitionally correct that over decades, say, for example, the bottom decile or quartile of wage earners have struggled more. The good news, though, when you look at that data, the people who have been in those bottom strata have moved up. Mm-hmm. Not always. Mm. This is a general comment. There are some people who are stuck and can't get kind of get up. But generally speaking, in the U.S., as bad of a problem as the K-shape has been and is more now, the good news is in this economy, in this capitalistic society of America, what you'll find is someone who's struggling has an opportunity to kind of move up that ladder a little bit. Now, is that, as I said, it's not the case for everybody, mm-hmm, and I'm not trying to gloss over that one bit.
You also sometimes see the credit card bills go up and the credit card debt go up, yeah, because people want to continue to consume at the level that they have, even though the prices are higher and their wages have stagnated, right? That happens.
Yep. So it becomes more of a conversation about government policy to help those people on the bottom lift themselves up more than it is a big reflection on the economy or the stock market. Because again, that top 20% can really power the volume of purchase and the dollar value of purchase that are out there. And if you look at the, let's say the S&P 500, which is typically one of the biggest, broadest, most recognized and used benchmarks of the U.S. stock market, mm-hmm, it's a small percentage, something like 5% of the earnings are really derived from people who are in the lower quartile of earnings, or maybe decile. I think quartile, I forgot. Sometimes I'm a better librarian than I am a library. So what does that mean for the economy? It means for the economy, on the gross domestic product, the broadest look, things can still look good, even though some people are dragging behind. And so policy probably should help them more than the concern of the K.
Yeah.
And the stock market can continue doing well. And it sort of masks these problems that exist.
And it's interesting, too, how the folks that are doing the best right now, I think, are the ones that are invested or have assets, right? Who, aren't living paycheck to paycheck, have more than just a small amount in a savings or no savings at all. It's the people that seem to have the deep asset bench, if you will.
Well, the good news from my viewpoint over the years is that the percentage of Americans who own stocks has increased, and a large part of that is when people sign up for the 401ks for their companies,
yep,
they are defaulted in as opposed to having to elect to get in.
Yep.
There's a behavioral nudge there that gets people to move on that.
Right.
And people do like to see winning, mm-hmm, like we mentioned earlier on. The false advertising for prediction markets being enticing for people to say, oh, people are winning, I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
Stock market, this has some bad years and bad stretches, but for the most part, for a couple dozen years, it's done really well.
Right.
And people see that, and right or wrong, they're like, oh, this is something that's going to continue to happen because it has happened previously.
Yeah, and it's important to make that distinction too, that the economy and the stock market are two different things. They're interrelated in a lot of ways, but saying the stock market is great doesn't mean that the economy necessarily is great. Well, historically,
especially going back to the K problem.
Yeah.
The bottom, if you look at that part of the economy, the lower part of, so people, by the way, for people who haven't heard the reference of K. So K, mm-hmm, is, if you think about the letter K, and you've got one leg of the K going up and, yep, one leg of the K going down, you've got two different groups of households, one where things are going well for them and up and to the right, and so it's improving, and the other is it's actually going down and not doing as, yep, well. So I forget the question after explaining the case. I'm sorry.
Well, one question just before our break I'll throw out there then. Do you think that the Fed is going to take action this year one way or the other? And do you think they're more likely to want to cut rates by the end of this year? Or do you think they're more likely that they'll raise rates at some point? How does it look, do you think?
I don't think they're going to do anything this year. The futures market says to expect at least one, almost two cuts. I'm sorry, hikes this year.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're going to do anything.
Which was a turnaround from last year where everybody was saying, oh, it's definitely going to get cut.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. A big part of that was because they saw Kevin Warsh coming in, picked by Trump, and so they thought that he was going to have the influence to get that done.
Yeah. So interesting talk here, and lots to go in the second half of the program with Alan Harris, the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Berkshire Money Management here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We're at that top of the hour break, Alan, so we're going to take that now, thank our underwriters, and give our station ID. And we'll be right back after this with more Morning Drive. Stay tuned, everybody.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. You're tuned to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield and 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates, welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
PCTV Select is now available on so many platforms. You can get it with any device you have available, all free to download and use. If you're watching at home, use your Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, or Apple TV device, or even your computer, and see programming in full HD quality. Watching on the go? Download PCTV Select from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store for your smartphone. It's that easy and free. PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
Berkshire Running Foundation was created to advance and support the positive impact the running community has in the neighborhoods we live. In the past decade, we have been able to donate over $300,000 to dozens of nonprofit organizations here in Berkshire County through our races and free wellness programming. Please visit berkshirerun.org to support our mission to continue to have a social and economic impact on the Berkshires.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you on a Thursday, July 2nd, and only a couple of days until July 4th. We're going to have a very hot day today. You're going to hear in the forecast in just a moment, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Alan Harris from Berkshire Money Management in just a moment. Just a reminder, Pittsfield 4th of July Parade is celebrating the generations this year, and PCTV is bringing you live coverage. You can join us on July 4th, beginning at 9:30 a.m. for parade coverage from South Street in Pittsfield on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301, PCTV Select 1, and on the Pittsfield Community TV Facebook page. Live coverage of the 4th of July Parade is supported by Greylock Federal Credit Union, also by Berkshire Community College, Access Plus, KJ Nosh Catering, the Boys and Girls Club of the Berkshires, Hudpuckers Pub and Grill, and Beacon Bank. And we thank all of our sponsors for helping us bring that production to you live wherever you are in the state and the world. We love doing it, and it's our biggest production of the year. So watch it. If you can't make it out to the parade, definitely tune into one of those outlets and join us for that day. All right, let's get to the weather forecast. Here it is.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Heat advisory in effect until 8 p.m. EDT Friday. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Near steady temperature around 70. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny, hot with highs in the mid-90s. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, nice short weather forecast. It's going to be hot. You don't have to look out the window for that. Hot and sunny. Got quite a bit of some thunderstorms overnight last night, too. So I was asleep by then, but we could use the rain, as you can see. But we're getting a lot of sun, a lot of heat, for sure. All right. Alan Harris, thanks again for being here today. Always great talking to you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's talk about AI for a bit and sort of the effect it is having on the economy and will have on the economy. I think that's the bigger question in most people's minds right now. They kind of get an idea of what AI is going to do and they get a little anxious about it, I think. But there's all kinds of effects that are going on. I want to talk specifically, I think, about the economic effects of it. And it harkens back to me a little bit about the late 90s and looking at how the stock market and the tech stocks and the chip stocks and things like that have just sort of blown up like crazy. Like if you owned NVIDIA 10 years ago and you still held on to it today, you'd be pretty wealthy, right? I mean, it was ridiculous amounts of, over and over itself in terms of investment gains. Is this another bubble like the dot-com boom and bust? Do you think that we're sort of in the middle of that right now and everybody just wants to jump in and fear of missing out, that kind of thing?
So I've been arguing for a long time that it has not been a bubble. And I say a long time because the last couple of years, you've heard a lot of comparisons to the 90s and you've heard the word bubble a lot. And that's not to say there can't be spots where there are bubbles.
Yeah.
Quickly, I'll touch upon an era where I think there is a bubble. I think it's in memory stock. So I wrote an article recently about, is Micron the new NVIDIA? And a term that I've heard referenced before and I use is a double is a bubble. So if you see a double in a stock price or an index price over, say, a year, that's likely going to mean that the price has gone ahead of the fundamentals.
It's a little frothy, right?
Yep.
Like your latte.
Yeah, exactly.
there's a lot of bubbles there, but there's not a lot of liquid.
Not a lot of substance to it. And some of the memory stocks, so Micron in particular, and some of its competitors like SK Hynix and Samsung, you've seen not a double, but like an 8X type of return over the last year plus. And one of the reasons that they've gone up so much is because there's a bottleneck on the artificial intelligence infrastructure build out because they need memory chips in order to make the large language models run faster.
So supply and demand, right? There's a huge demand for these memory chips.
And they can only crank out so much supply.
They can't make enough of them.
And their revenue and earnings and margins have just absolutely exploded. Nearly that 8X amount. So is it really a bubble if you see an 8X increase of a stock price, but you've seen a similar increase in the amount of earnings? Well, of course, that matters about sustainability of that continued earnings growth is going to be, and if it can keep up sort of thing. And memory stocks, memory chip stocks in particular, have been very cyclical. It's been a glut, and then the inverse of that, back and forth a lot of times over the years. So it may be that one sliver, but that one sliver is a large part of the overall NASDAQ index. So if you see that thing pop, the NASDAQ itself could go down. But overall, I do not see a bubble in these stocks. One thing I've actually said in my investment committee meetings is that there's a non-zero chance of a bubble forming, mm-hmm. which is to say, listen, I think that a bubble could actually happen,
yeah.
which would be bad in the long term for the stock market and economy, but it would make my day. Mm. I would like to see, because I think that I'm clever enough to get out of it, whether or not I am, of course, is a different thing, because it's not even the cleverness, it's the hard part about getting on the top of a bubble is that you don't know when you can get out and give up on the potential additional gains.
Right.
So it was in 1996 when Alan Greenspan, the former head of the Federal Reserve, expressed that there was irrational exuberance in the stock market, and he was right yeah. on many counts.
Yeah. He was only 4 years early, though,
exactly. Right? I mean, yeah. the stock market, I think, tripled up until it's popping.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have a bubble because it's going to be great for myself and my portfolios and my clients. But then we have to figure out how to get out of it in the right time.
Yeah.
But it's not, I do not think it's a bubble.
Right. Well, and you know, you're paying for a stock today that you're going to buy on the future earnings of that stock, not what was past. And that's something that's hard for people, I think, to understand that are just getting into investing, is that, okay, you saw something go up 600%, 800%. I got to get into that. Well, that's probably the exact wrong time that you need to get into that, at least, you know, in a large way. You know, it's timing the market versus time in the market, right? People are just not giving it yeah. enough chance, and they probably, you know, should have had those thoughts 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, what happens a lot of times for investors is the true rationale for buying a stock is price goes up, so I'm going to buy it. And then they build a narrative around it afterwards, mm-hmm. but it's really just the fear of missing out.
Yeah.
But on it not being a bubble, you know, forward earnings, I use the S&P 500 as a benchmark, and a popular way to measure the valuation in a bubble, really, what does that mean? It means the prices are far exceeding where the earnings is. And so if you look at the price-to-earnings ratio, which is a very popular valuation metric for the S&P 500, for any stock, you know, it's roughly 22 times forward earnings. Mm-hmm. Is that expensive? It's the 10-year average is roughly 18, 19, something like that. Mm-hmm. But then
for some stocks, it's even less, right? 13, 12, 13, 15 might be an average price-to-earnings ratio for sort of ordinary stocks. The tech stocks you're going to pay more for, right?
Yeah, the tech stocks will increase it, but increase that valuation. But they deserve that. There's such a thing in business called the hierarchy of revenue, and they command a higher multiple because they either have contracts or recurring revenue, and it sort of locks in and has a predictability of earnings, as opposed to, say, for example, the coffee shop down the road that you should have flat, a very low multiple because it's very transactional and doesn't have this recurrent earning. You might have a loyal customer, but it's just basically who stops in, and there's a proximity concern and all that kind of thing. Hmm. So you've got that. But also the margins that the companies, S&P 500, make are considerably higher than they were. And then you've got better management practices, and you've got a higher total addressable market because through the advent of the internet, we can do business with people in India and Singapore almost as easily as we can people in Baltimore and Pittsfield. So you have a lot of reasons why those multiples deserve to be higher than they were or have been anyways.
Yeah. It's interesting to see, again, how the investing world works. And sometimes, you know, the longer term investing of getting in and staying in, that's one style of investing. Another style might be that you're a trader and that you like to see, you know, and try to time things and move in and out. Over the long term, who does better at those strategies?
Well, you can look at the data for that, and it's pretty clear. I mean, the buy and hold is certainly the winning strategy. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier on in the beginning of our segment together, some people call the stock market casino, mm-hmm. but if it is, it's the worst casino in history because the shorter period of time you're in there, the higher the odds you're going to lose money. The longer time you're there, the greater the odds. Mm-hmm. And whether you're looking at...
If you're still there at the casino at 5 in the morning, you're pretty much done.
Yeah, exactly. So there's been reports, certainly, whether it's Dalbar, Morningstar, et cetera, that it's really hard to get in the market and out of the market. Now, that being said, I will use tactical moves. Like, there's certain... I don't subscribe to everyone should be diversified in every single sector and every single asset class in a rigid percentage, because sometimes things just are doing better and there's a reason for them to do better. So you want to shift your allocations one way or another.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean you necessarily want to be trying to time the market on a short-term basis. It's more looking at trends with some rationale behind why you might want to do those.
And you may also want to shift your investment perspective based on your risk tolerance, your age, all the other factors that come into play, right? That as life goes on, when you're younger, you can take more risks, you can be more aggressive on things. And as you get a little older, you may need to readjust those strategies. It's harder to know when you've reached that point, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So going back to those memory stocks being up, 800%. I've got an ETF that I use for myself and I use for some of my aggressive clients, where I think something like 27% of the ETF is invested in those memory stocks. So it's done really well. I don't put that in my conservative clients' portfolios.
Right.
They would have been happy if I did the last year.
Sure.
But at some point, that thing is going to get cut 20% in a month, and it's not going to feel good to them.
Yeah. You got to like roller coasters, right?
Yeah,
if you're
exactly.
Going to be in that. Alan Harris, my guest here, if you're just joining us on Morning Drive. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Berkshire Money Management. And so back to AI and the impacts there for a minute. So mentioned chip stocks and this sort of shortages of things. That has kind of a knock-on effect for consumers and for sort of ordinary things that we need, like, say, when we want to buy a new iPhone, or if we want to buy a new computer, or we want to add some memory to our existing computer, or buy a new hard drive or something like that, right? I mean, we do a lot of that here at PCTV because we're into that business. Those prices are crazy. I mean, up fourfold, fivefold from like a year and a half ago when we were buying this stuff. It's way more expensive, and people are going to start seeing that. Energy prices, for example, when AI data centers get located in places, they need a lot of power. They need a lot of cooling, water, things like that. The impacts that these things are having. And I don't know exactly what the question is there, but it's inevitable that this is going to happen to our society. Are the benefits going to outweigh the risks and the challenges of this? Can we get through that?
I'm going to tackle that one in a second.
It's a lot there.
So, yeah. Because you have to. Let's start with the benefits. Are they going to outweigh or not?
Yep.
We don't know, but I suspect yes. For centuries, there's been new industrial revolutions and new technologies that have come to the forefront and worried people about what was going to happen. Is it going to take my job? Right. Is it going to diminish my quality of life? What are the environmental effects? Mm-hmm. Which is a whole big conversation in itself.
Right.
And what we've seen with new technologies is there's absolutely new industrial revolutions, and I consider this to be a new industrial revolution. There's absolutely displacement and changes. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it hasn't been that big of an issue over time because they've taken effect slowly. Mm. So you had an opportunity to retrain or just exit an industry because you've aged out of it and you're tired. This is happening really fast with artificial intelligence. So the concern is that, I could lose, not necessarily that I could lose my job. I think some of the greatest concern is actually people coming out of college because...
And never having a job even to get.
Yes, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is a long-term problem for companies because, we have three interns at our office right now, thank goodness, because what we want to do is hopefully train them to be employees later on. Mm-hmm. But if we were to use large language models instead, we're not going to have that AAA kind of league to kind of grow them into being potential employees and potential value to us. So it's a concern for the employee, for the college kids, but it's also, I feel, a futuristic concern for other companies who want to use that.
Yeah. So deeper society concern in a lot of ways too, isn't it? Because again, if you're cutting off those first experiences in the working world, it's much harder, if you get 5-10 years down the road out of college in that area, and now you're looking to get in, they'll be looking back and saying, well, all right, show me what you've done. What can you do? What can you do for us? And those are the foundational experiences, not to mention just sort of the soft skills of working with other people and creating something and being in a company and, all the things that go along with that.
So I will also say that I feel that a lot of those concerns about job displacement are ahead of ourselves. So a lot of people use the term AI, and they're really referencing large language models. AI has been around in some form or fashion since the 50s, maybe early 60s, something like that. And we've all used it in one way or another, whether we knew it or not. Whether it's a product that we use that was embedded in it, or a predictive text, or whatever it happens to be. I don't talk to a lot of business owners who have fired or replaced employees to use AI. Instead, what they're doing is using them to become more productive. And there's a thing out there called Jevons Paradox, where when something reduces the cost, you use them more. And so if you're making an employee more productive, you're more likely to bring on more employees because the cost of the employee has de facto gone down because they're more powerful if they're using artificial intelligence. You've seen that, for example, in radiologists. It turns out that AI is really good at detecting issues when people get x-rays and MRIs. And so there was a concern that all the radiologists were going to be replaced by AI. And what happened instead is that hospitals hired more radiologists because they're able to do more work and make more detections. And they need that human to speak to another human so the radiologist can explain to the patient what's going on. And so while it's going to be harder for us to perhaps find what we're going to have interns do, I think that we have them do the same thing, but just do it better with the use of large language models. So while I do want to point to the concerns, I do think that they're also overhyped.
I guess if you're an employer and you're bringing somebody new on, someone who's maybe, you know, having some of their first experiences with work or whatever, that it, potentially you'd want them to have some skills in the AI world. You want them to have some exposure to that and to know how to do things almost the same way 25 years ago when you were hiring young people and you said, well, I hope they know how to do something with the internet because we don't know how to do that around here. We need to bring people in that can help us with that. We need somebody to build a website. We need somebody to, you know, manage our files and our emails and all the other things that came along with that revolution. I would imagine that, you know, you'd also want people with skills coming out who can leverage the AI and do those kinds of things and make people more productive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a silly example, but you know, I can bring an intern in instead of doing a coffee run for everybody. Write me a social media. You get onto OpenAI.
Yep.
Write a prompt. Come up with a social media campaign that we're going to run for the 3 months that you're here. Come up with a schedule and then use an agent to go ahead and deploy them when we decide they want to go out.
Yeah. And ultimately, though, still a human in the loop, right? Someone before it goes out, there isn't just a machine spitting that stuff out. It's like, no, someone's looking at it and saying, but I'm going to say whether that is going to be published or representing our company or whatever, that kind of thing.
Now, I will also say, so there's probably a listener saying, but Alan, I've heard all these companies saying they're laying off workers because they're going to use AI. I call shenanigans totally on that. Coming out of the pandemic, it was going back to supply and demand. There was a lot of demand for employees because business owners laid people off. And then the supply was like, I'm not coming back unless we have more favorable conditions. And so there was a lot of... It was like one step back during the pandemic. Yeah. As an again, silly example.
It was a brief moment, but it happened.
A silly example. People didn't need more toilet paper, but they saw everyone was buying toilet paper. It's like, I better buy toilet paper too. So everybody kept buying all the toilet paper. It went through a version of that by businesses across the nation. We're like, I better hire as many employees as I can because I need them. What we found over time is that we didn't need as many of them. And some of them became more productive. Some of them were excess and just weren't as productive. And so really what companies are doing as a result is sort of right-sizing. Instead of saying, hey, we overhired and made a bad decision and hired the wrong people and hired too many people, I'm going to sound super in the zeitgeist and smart and saying we're deploying AI to make these done. Now, is there some element of that that's probably true? Yeah, maybe for the large companies like Microsoft that know what they're doing and how to deploy AI, sure. But for
and
most
there have
companies,
been some very large layoffs, right, at the larger tech companies.
Yeah, but for most companies, it's just I call shenanigans. Mm. The layoffs are really because they overhired.
Yeah. And they can certainly see the future, too, right? So they're looking at that and saying, what do we need not for today, but for next year, 3 years, 5 years from now?
I don't know if I'd be that generous to think that they're hiring 5 years out, but
future anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Alan Harris, my guest here this morning, if you're just joining us, a few minutes left of the show. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Berkshire Money Management. I wanted to get a quick hit in on something called alternative investing. And I think the big thing I think of when I put something in that bucket would be private equity, right? Things that aren't stocks because they're privately held companies. And yet somehow now investors are getting access to being able to invest in those. Those people are not like the super wealthy, rich people that can only get access to these things. They're starting to sort of making them available to the larger investing class. But maybe some of those people aren't sophisticated enough, or that maybe they're not getting enough information on these private equity companies to really understand what they're getting into. What are your thoughts on
All
some
right.
of that?
So, I love the idea of people having access to private markets for sure, without a doubt. And I can only tell you why I haven't. And because it's expensive.
Yep.
That's really it. I talked to a bunch of different companies myself for Berkshire Money Management with the idea of being, okay, do I want to buy OpenAI? Do I want to buy Anthropic? Do I want to own SpaceX? And there's a difference between having $100 million and going to Elon Musk and saying, I want to invest in this your Series H or getting it earlier in your seed round or whatever it happened to be. And then you're on the cap table officially. I don't have access to that. But firms like mine do have access to the private market through these other intermediaries and partners, if you will, where there's sort of this almost like secondary market. But you don't just get on the cap table. You pay 2 to 5% of whatever it is that you're going to for a commission, and then whatever it is you becomes liquid, they get 20% of whatever that is. I'm kind of making because everyone's a little bit different, but it's basically you better hope that your investment grows like super sized because they're already going to take a ton of it off the top right off the bat. And I could not justify the whopping amount of costs that were associated with that to get into the private markets. I looked at it over the last couple of years. I'll put it right out there. I thought not only would this might this be great for my clients, but this could be good for building my business. I can market. You want access to OpenAI and SpaceX? I can do that for you. But then I'd be like, I'm not gonna do something shady. And so it was way too expensive and too big of a hurdle for the clients to make money or any investors to make money the way they're doing it right now.
Not as much information out there either, right? So it's not the reporting requirements and the quarterly reports and all the things, the analysts keeping an eye on it the way that sort of public companies are. It's a very different thing, right?
Oh yeah. So when a company goes public, they file what's called a Form S-1. And it's them saying, here's all the financial data that we have, but it's still not everything you'd get from a public company that's reporting quarterly earnings.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's robust. But it's not at all what you'd get when you go into a private market. It's a lot of like, okay, if you're going to invest that $100 million out of my pocket, and it's my personal check, you're going to get a look under the hood after you sign an NDA. Okay, cool. But if you're going to get the private markets through an intermediary, like you would through a company like mine or any brokerage house that's out there, you're hoping that those financials are good because you don't get that look under the hood.
And hope is not an investment strategy, right?
Right? Exactly.
Well, Alan Harris, I want to say thank you again for being here this morning. It's always great talking to you. Lots of stuff we covered this morning. Anything else you'd like to say before we're off the air here today?
Just a happy semi-quincentennial
That's
to everybody.
It.
Yeah.
I like that. Happy semi-quincentennial. That's good. Half of 500 years. We're there.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Last time, probably, I'll be talking to you as well here before the 4th of July parade. Wish everybody a healthy and safe 4th. Have fun out there. Be safe in and around the heat that's happening, certainly today, probably the worst of it. And then tomorrow and Saturday, not as bad, but it's still hot. So definitely up. 80s to low 90s. You know what to do. Keep hydrated and keep out of the sun.
And don't leave your dogs in the car.
Yeah, please. Right? Or babies.
Yeah.
For that matter.
I wouldn't think they would do that, but my goodness. Yeah, don't do that either.
You wouldn't think.
I will break your window.
Oh, my goodness. I'll break the window. Don't do that. All right, everybody. Have a great 4th of July weekend, and Morning Drive will return again after the 4th. Take care, everybody.